Welcome to Reboot Republic, the podcast that looks at the big issues in this republic of inequality. We are the podcast of analysis, hope, and solutions. Today, we are looking at the issue of social and affordable housing and the use of public land for another public-private partnership. This time, the Oscar Traynor site in North Dublin. And we ask, is it a good deal? Dublin City Councillors are set to vote on the transfer of this public land to a private developer on Monday night. With us to discuss this are John Lyons, Dublin City Councillor for Arte and Whitehall, Leisha Nealon, journalist with the Dublin Inquirer, Keane O'Callaghan, TD with the Social Democrats and housing spokesperson for them, and Claire O'Connor with the Dublin Housing Campaign. We want to put a call out to our listeners, of which we know there are thousands of you out there. We know you like what you hear, and we are independent media, so we have no source of funding other than from you. All these podcasts cost to produce and host, so please help us continue to bring the voices and analysis from the frontline experts and change makers. Become a patron and sign up to patreon.com/tortoiseshack. Now, in this Oscar Traynor deal, there are clearly a number of issues that need to be addressed. It was my understanding that we had a consensus across the political system, including the Minister for Housing, that public land was to be used for public and affordable housing only. Yet this deal involves over 800 units being built, but only 20% are social, 30% affordable, but there's big questions even how affordable these actually are going to be, and at least half of the units are going to be privately sold at market value. So that means that over 400 housing units will be unaffordable to most people. That anything other than genuinely affordable housing is being built on public land is actually criminal. This will involve the state transferring land to the private developer Glenveagh and then buying the social housing back off it. Your head would actually spin with the daftness of this. I've written about this extensively, about the privatisation of public land, in my book Housing Shock, and it's based on a developer, private investor inspired idea that was taken on by the Department of Housing and local authorities about using the value of public land to get house building going. But it's actually handing the value of that public land over to a developer. It is what we have called it, a form of corporate welfare. I thought that we'd learned from the disaster of public-private partnerships collapsing in 2008 and O'Devany Gardens, where these land transfer PPPs involve either windfall profits for private developers, and in O'Devany Gardens, Bartra Capital is set to make over 60 million in profits off this public land, or they turn out in a disaster with delays and projects collapsing because developers decide they're no longer profitable and nothing happens. And this seems very possible in this deal, where we're in the middle of a pandemic with very unclear as to what's going to happen to the housing market. Worse still, we could see the 400 private units being sold, and it seems very likely, to a real estate investment fund or a vulture fund. So public land will be lining the pockets of private developer Glenveagh and then again the big investor funds, locking more of generation rent into unaffordable rents into the future. But there is an alternative, better way of doing this. The state can borrow at practically zero cost and build really affordable public homes. The O'Coolan Cooperative is doing this just up the road. While there are beneficial aspects to the plan, like community services and facilities, at its core, this is an illogical, wrong-headed, and actually a very bad deal and should be scrapped. And instead, 100% public and affordable homes built on the land. What do you think, John Lyons?
Well, I couldn't agree more, Rory. Yeah, you put it very well. The situation that we on Dublin City Council have been faced with since February of 2015, when the idea of the Housing Land Initiative was first brought to our attention. And it was put to us that we needed to leverage whatever assets we owned, the City Council had, in order to deliver much needed and badly required housing. And so it was put to us that they should go out to see what kind of interest the market would have in four different parcels of land, the Oscar Traynor, O'Devany, St. Michael's, and actually Belcamp, not too far from Oscar Traynor, was also on the list, as was actually Cherry Orchard. Those last two were taken off the list, and the top three are the three that we have now, St. Michael's, O'Devany, and the latest one is Oscar Traynor. Now, some of us on the council at that time, through 2016 to 2017, argued that we needed to have a better model of housing delivery. Public delivery of, social rental, cost rental was being talked about around that time. The Vienna model was mentioned in particular, more so into 2018, 2019. But at each hand's turn, when we asked the Housing Strategic Policy Committee to develop an alternative model of housing delivery in parallel to what the officials were seeking to do, which was to go with a developer-led delivery of model. We ran into a brick wall every time. They just weren't going to do it. And so, look, some of us opposed it from the get-go because we didn't think 50% of the units been built on these sites going, as you say, at unaffordable prices on the open market. Potentially, well, we know a certain percentage will go to institutional investors. And so you will have a situation, more than likely, that some of us raised before, where you'll have private buyers and they will become HAP landlords, and you'll have the council paying a HAP rent to a landlord, and it'll be on an apartment built upon land that was once owned by the city council. So at every level, it's a bad return for the public purse. But to my mind, so there we were, Rory. You know, it's 4 years down the line, and it looks as if this week there seems to be a growing number of councillors and parties not only being concerned about it. There was a lot of concern around the O'Devney deal, but unfortunately not enough. Actually, we're concerned enough to reject that particular disposal. But I think we might have a different scenario come Monday evening because, look, 50% of the units, you know, we can argue the original total was 624 units for that site. They increased it up to 853. They do say, Hugh McKenna, the project leader, that it could go up to 1,000. Yeah. So if we dispose of that land on Monday, the title deeds, Glenveagh then have possession of it. And when they have their 6 months to lodge an application on Borpenola, it will go through the SHD track, which means that they could go higher than that and we'd have no control over it, which is a, you know, it's another concern there. But the core issue to my mind from the very beginning, and I've engaged with the process for the past 4 years because I wanted to learn more about procurement, about how we could, you know, develop different models of housing delivery within the council and more broadly at national level too. To my mind, it's a failure because it depends upon the developer. And if the developer, in this instance, Glenveagh, doesn't get the asking prices it wants for the units in the first phase, then that endangers the second phase, the third phase, the fourth phase, the fifth phase. It's inherently riskier model. They say to us, the city officials, that there's less risk for the city council pursuing this model than any other model. But we fundamentally disagree with that. We think this is actually a riskier way to go about it. And that actually best procurement practice under EU guidelines would say when you have a parcel of land that's, you know, that's significant in size, it's 17 hectares, it's 42 acres. The best way to go about developing it would be to parcel it into smaller plots of land and to tender it out to contractors to come on site to build on your behalf. You have a master plan, you have a vision for the site, and that way you retain the ownership within the council and you've retained full control over each phase of its development. You keep, you know, the prices down in terms of the affordable purchase, and it means you have an increased number of social and affordable homes available to people on middle and low income. And that's really what it comes down to. This isn't about an ideological position one way or the other. You know, Brendan Kenny, the housing manager, likes to throw that at us, that most people don't care which way housing is delivered as long as it's delivered. I actually do think they care. I think we're living in a world that is so fundamentally structured around the market and dependent upon developers to produce and deliver social goods. And it's failed. You know it's failed. You've done a lot of work around the PPP model that's failed. This is just a new version of that failed model. And it is difficult to get your head around. And I genuinely, speaking to some of my councillor colleagues over the last few days to get a sense of where they're at, and there is a lot of opposition to it. And I do think we've a good chance of coming out after Monday evening with an alternative plan, the potential to develop an alternative plan. But to my mind, I just think the city council officials, I don't think they do think it is the best deal that they can get, but they're stuck with it and they want to see it through.
Okay.
They don't want to admit that their model, which is dependent upon the market, is actually not the best one to pursue. They don't want to get further involved in housing provision. They would rather have it at arm's length with approved housing bodies, and further in terms of that. So there's a lot of issues there, Rory, but I think fundamentally what it comes down to is that if you have a site with over 800 units, to my mind, for people who are eligible for social housing or people who could potentially avail of cost rental or affordable purchase, to increase by a significant number the number of homes available by 100, 200, 300 can be life-changing for so many more families than the ones currently on the table. And that, to my mind, could transform so many people's lives that it's worth fighting tooth and nail for to get a better deal at the end of the day.
Yeah, no, clearly. And I'll come back to you, John, on that in terms of the campaign and what people can do. Keen O'Callaghan, in terms of the, you know, being a TD, you're not going to be voting, but maybe you could outline, you know, the your concerns about the deal. And, you know, do you envision, and I know Social Democrat councillors have raised concerns, do you see the Social Democrats voting against it on Monday night? And maybe as well, could you, you know, respond to this question of, well, what's the alternative like in a real sense? Because that's, I know that's what Dublin City Council officials will be saying. Well, we've no alternative way to develop this in terms of financially accessing finance.
Thanks, Rory. And just to agree with what John's been saying there. So, I mean, firstly, in terms of the Social Democrat councillors on Dublin City Council, they'll certainly be voting against this on Monday. Would be hopeful as well, as John is, that this can be defeated. Certainly, that's certainly possible. The main issues I'd have with it is, I mean, primarily opposed to sale of public land like this that could be used for public housing, affordable and social, sale to private developer. I'm against that in principle. I think we shouldn't do that really in any case, regardless of there's so little land owned at this stage and left for housing in Dublin City Council, but not the local authorities. I don't think that's a model that should be entertained at all. I think that is being pushed by the Department of Housing and being pushed at a political level from government. I think they're saying to councils, this is the model to go for. And I think that's part of the problem. You reference that the current minister keeps on saying public housing and public land. And you're right, he says that, but there's no sign of actual kind of action at a government or national political level, or certainly Department of Housing level, to go back to what up to recently was the model, which is that we used public land for public housing. And in fact, we need to go further than that and build up public land banks so we can increase the supply after the likes of Oscar Traynor lands are developed out. We can increase the supply of social and affordable housing. But the idea that with the limited supply we have in city council area now, that would be sold off, doesn't make sense. I'm opposed to it. Now, I think if you look at the details of this, I have a very particular concern around the whole value for money on this. I think the figures that the city council have given to the councillors that I've seen, I have to say, quite frankly, they don't make sense to me. So, John can add to this or correct me on any of this, but from what I saw, city council told the councillors that if the city council did direct build, it would cost in region of about 450,000 euro to build a 2-bed. Apartment, the figures that City Council gave them. And that was part of their justification for proposing this sell-off to a private developer, saying it could be produced at a better price through a private sector model. And I don't know how Dublin City Council can defend that 450,000 euro figure they came out with. In some of the documentation they gave to the councillors, they showed a cross-section of previous costs for 2-bed apartments produced by Dublin City Council on their behalf. And that cross-section actually showed that the prices were between 330,000 and 400,000 euro, which is still very high. Mm. And I think when they were looking at these, they're actually looking at examples that aren't comparable to the Oscar Traynor Road. So a lot of the limited social housing that's been done by the City Council in the last few years has been on quite small sites, quite brownfield sites, ones that are actually quite costly to develop. So they are not a comparison basis for a larger development on effectively a greenfield site in the Oscar Traynor Road. So I think the figures, if you like, that the City Council have used to justify this don't make sense at all. Mm. It's a very poor case for in terms of value for money. Be very concerned, as John said as well, about the 50% of the housing being sold off privately, not at affordable rates, and that they will actually end up with a couple of institutional investors, cuckoo funds, in effect. And if not, they could end up with individual private landlords, and a lot of those renting back, so that the state is then paying for the unit through HAP or rent supplement or whatever, and paying off the mortgage of the landlord over a 20 or 30-year period. So it makes no sense in that regard either. And then the affordable prices that are being suggested as part of this, and they're reliant on different grants still being in place. I'd be sceptical as well as to how affordable they are for a lot of people on lower to middle incomes. So there'd be some of the concerns that have it, just in terms of, you're asking about, you know, the alternative. So very much should be kept in public ownership. It should be a council-led project. We know that's more cost-effective, especially from recent research analysis done by the Department of Housing, which shows that council-led housing is about 30% more cost-effective than the private sector. Should be a mix of social housing, cost rental, maybe some affordable purchase, but all of it should be public and an affordable affordable level. And if there is affordable purchase, it should probably be on the model of retaining the land ownership and public ownership, so that you know, family can, and household can buy for their lifetime, but then it goes back into the scheme, so it remains as affordable housing, you know, in perpetuity, rather than, you know, affordable purchase turning into, down the road, a form of privatized housing. And then, you know, it is important that the elements of the scheme around amenities, parks, community facilities are delivered at a high standard. Mm-hmm. And that, of course, can be done in a public model just as well as a private model. And in fact, I think, taking the point of risk, there's a huge risk always with any of these things with private developers, that the goalposts are changed over time, that you could end up in a situation where you don't get all your amenities delivered that are promised. That certainly has happened before. You know, developments have gone, as you said before, public-private partnerships have gone bust. You could have some of the homes built and sold off privately without everything delivered if there was a downturn or whatever. So you've all of those risks, as well as a higher cost of financing thrown into the mix. So the public model makes sense in terms of, you know, I think the interests of people in the area would be a better chance of accessing housing, but also just in terms of the overall value for money for the taxpayer, if you like.
Great. Thanks, Ken. I think that you know, there's a lot there, you know, that you're highlighting as well, and John has. And I think, you know, there's so many questions about this. And again, I think John made the point there about the inherent risk in this, and this notion, the council saying, well, it's less risky for us. Like, it's actually not true. And the evidence is there that these projects, and we'll go back to Michael's estate and others, even though they'll say this is different, fundamentally, it is still the same approach, because you're handing over the development of a public site to a private actor who is going to make all the decisions based on whether they can calculate, can they sell at a certain value in the future? And it's completely dependent on what happens within the housing market. And currently that market is all over the place, and we don't know what's going to happen. And of course, things are likely to change in the coming years. But we do know as well, of course, Glenveagh itself is in the business of building for the build to rent sector. So it is most likely to sell this to, as you said, an institutional investor. And I'll come back to you, Keane. I would like to get your view on what do you think should happen now in terms of, should it be the city councillors voting against it and then requesting the minister to respond? But I'll come back to you on that. Leisha Nealon from the Dublin Inquirer, you've written a number of articles on this, and you've been following it from the O'Devany Gardens. You've been playing a sterling role in highlighting the detail of these deals, and some of it is absolutely mind-boggling. Like, you wonder, where is the logic in it at all from the state? What's your analysis of this deal now and comparing it to O'Devany? And of course, you've highlighted the delays already in O'Devany Gardens.
Thanks, Rory. I mean, I suppose the first thing to say would be that the designs are really good. I mean, it looks really great, and it's got parks and cycle tracks and a community centre, and if everything in the designs was delivered, it'd be a fabulous place to live.
Yeah.
The problem is that only 30% of the homes are going to be social housing, and that the affordable housing isn't really affordable to an average earning couple, say. So if you were on 60,000 euros, say, as a couple earning 30,000 each, which is an average income, you can only borrow 210,000 from a bank. So you can't actually buy one of these affordable homes.
Yeah.
So if an average earning couple can't buy one, then it's not really affordable.
Yeah, exactly.
So really what
yeah.
you're only getting here is the social. And then the question is that worth it? You know, that's basic stuff. I mean, the claim that it costs 450,000 euros for the council to build a social home on land that it owns, but it doesn't have to pay any taxes, is just really quite funny, because like, I'm from the countryside, and if you had your own land, like, you'd build a mansion with six bedrooms, gold tap. I mean, for 450,000, it's quite ludicrous. And it's jumped up significantly, because this time last year, or even more recently, Brendan Kenny was saying, you know, 330,000, and people were kind of going, really, is it that dear?
Yeah.
And they just seem to have jumped 120 grand for this particular project, from what I can see. I don't know if John had ever heard that fear before. It was the first time I heard it. So I think that's quite an interesting development.
Mm.
And clearly we would have to see, you know, broken down evidence of that price. It's just very unusual. Apart from that, we don't know much. They have said that the land is being valued at 44 million.
Yeah.
So that would set it aside from O'Devany, where the land was grossly undervalued.
Mm.
But it doesn't seem particularly clear how that value would be delivered. In that, I suppose, if the developer builds in all the stuff that he builds in, that would be part of it. And then they're supposed to get 14 million as well to the council in cash. I suppose people would probably prefer to have the houses, but
yeah.
So there's lots of little things like that. It is a bit different from O'Devany in that regard. An interesting thing that the council officials did say was that they can't deliver this kind of scheme. That's not how their funding structure works, that they get funding for homes, and that they wouldn't be able to build out all of this other stuff that's in this design at the moment. So, I mean, I don't know if that's the case, if it's an issue for the Department of Housing, because obviously you need all of these things. You don't just need the homes. You need everything that's in the designs would need to be there for an estate of nearly 1,000 homes. You'd want to have the parks and the playgrounds and all of that stuff as well. So that would be key to get to the bottom of whether that's true and whether they really can't deliver on that. I suppose if you zoom back a bit as well, the only other thing really would be, has anything changed now that it's Fianna Fáil Housing Minister? We don't know. We've heard extensively from Fianna Fáil councillors in the council about their passionate advocacy for the Vienna housing model.
Yeah.
I've been wondering for years whether that is Fianna Fáil policy at all. From what I've seen of Dara Bryan as the minister, it seems that it's not. So that's going to be really interesting if this does get battered back by the councillors. And if councillors don't go for this deal, then, you know, it's down to the housing minister. Is he willing to offer something more than what Fine Gael were willing to offer? Because I think what was going on from, in a way, was a battle. I don't know if John would agree, but it's kind of like a battle between the councillors on the one hand and the Minister for Housing on the other. And at the end of the day, the money does have to get released, probably by national government. So the question is Dara O'Brien any different from his predecessors in Simon Coveney and Owen Murphy? And is he willing to fund, you know, social housing on the site at a larger scale? Because, you know, there's 16,000 households on the list and they're not going anywhere. Dublin City Council housed 500 households last year. So at that rate, the kids that are homeless today, like, they'll be grown up and probably have children themselves by the time their mother gets a house. Like, it's a really desperate need, as well as the need of people who just, you know, would prefer to be renting publicly than privately. But certainly when you look at the desperate need of the social housing list, we need to be doing something on a completely different scale from what we're doing it.
Yeah. And it seems, Leisha, that, you know, and you've written about this, like, if we look at O'Devany Gardens, that should surely be sending warning signals in terms of the way the developer has gone back. You know, there's been delays again with that. You know, maybe you could outline what's happened around that it still hasn't started and there's no sign of it starting.
Yeah, I think the thing with O'Devany is really relevant to this. And what's happened there is that the deal was that the developer would apply for planning by summer 2020. Mm-hmm. Now they're saying that's going to be March 21.
Yeah.
So there is an 11-month delay, approximately, in them actually applying for that planning permission. The good news on that one is they seem to have added more housing. Potentially, that's good news. So that would increase the number of social homes on the site as well. From, it was going to be 248, so there'd be 333.
Yeah.
Going in there now. But obviously, there's a lot of questions. I mean, the new designs are said to be 12 stories. So I don't know if that's going to work for Stony Batter with the little cottages and then going up to that height. It seems very high for that area. But the main thing, I suppose, that would concern people, is definitely the delays. And that does come into the Oscar Traynor thing as well, because the deal for Oscar Traynor Road, it seems to be based on the complete construction all being completed by the end of 2024. And then there's a potential for overruns if that doesn't happen. But judging by the length of time between the councillor signing off on the O'Devany Gardens deal, and the developer actually putting in for planning, and then, you know, after that he has to wait, go through the planning process. Like, when are the builders actually going to start building with O'Devany Gardens? It's going to be like a good year and a half after the deal was sanctioned. So if the same thing was to happen with this one, you'd only have 2.5 years to build out the whole scheme until you'd be gone past 2024 and then potentially into overruns. So there's serious questions to be answered about that. I mean, the deal's been presented as if it's the full price. Not that we know what it is, because we don't.
Yeah.
But if there's a potential for overruns, that's a whole different story as well.
Yeah. You know, you're absolutely right to raise that. And I'll come back to the others in terms of some of those questions. I think you've raised some really, really important questions that do need to be answered. And I think particularly that whole question of overruns and the question of what will the minister do, I think is great. I'll come back to you on some of those, Leisha. I want to go to Keane O'Callaghan again, because I know, Keane, you have to go in terms of a vote. And I know Claire O'Connor is going to come in as well on the campaign shortly. Keane, just maybe you could respond to some of those points by Leisha and kind of my question around should the councillors vote this down and request a meeting with the minister? Is that what should happen?
Yeah, I think the councillors should vote it down. I certainly request a meeting with the minister. I think effectively what will happen is, if this is voted down, is that the Department of Housing, working with the city council officials, will probably try and tweak the scheme a little bit, offer some small kind of concessions or compromises, and see if they can build a majority to get this through on a second vote, if you like. And in terms of the campaign that's been run, you know, very important to get this win on Monday, but then very important to look at that period afterwards. And I'd say that would probably be the tactics. And effectively, there'd be, you know, a standoff on this from the hopefully majority of the councillors, really against kind of, you know, the Department of Housing and the kind of model that they're pushing. And that could take some time to resolve. And really, until the Department of Housing is absolutely certain that they can't get their model through, it's only when we reach that point, which I don't think we'll reach on Monday, even if we get a majority against us, it will take more time to do that. It's only at that point that we'll really be in the position of being able to get serious buy-in at that level for an alternative model. I think to get the Department of Housing, seeing that the City Council is deadly serious about this, work will have to be done at a council level by the councillors on the Housing SBC or elsewhere, putting forward exactly what kind of model and what sort of outline plans that they want for the area. And that can involve, you know, discussions and involvement with the local community as well. And as Leisha says, there's in terms of design of this scheme, there's some really good design in terms of the wetlands and the Lawrence Lands Park and Orchard and Park, pocket parks and playgrounds, community hub and all that. So all that should be retained. And absolutely, like a key issue in this is the funding model for those amenities. And it is the case that the Department of Housing is not providing funding for those. The Department of Housing is going to the City Council and saying the only way that we will approve development of these lands is in a public-private partnership model. I've no doubt the Department of Housing is doing that. So until we reach the stage where the Department of Housing is incredibly clear that the city councillors will not accept that model, and the city councillors will only accept a public model, we probably won't make progress in this. That doesn't mean that can't all happen quite quickly, and we can't make progress on that quickly. That, you know, the bigger a vote against us on Monday, the stronger position we will be to move on with it quickly enough. So, you know, getting a majority, hopefully a big majority, and solidifying that will be important. And the, you know, the community campaign, the grassroots campaign, is absolutely critical in this. The stronger that is, the more chance we have of getting the kind of model of housing that we need here. But I look, it's not going to be, we won't be just be, you know, we might, hopefully we'll win a battle on Monday night. We're not going to win the war on Monday night, if you want to use that kind of analogy.
Yeah. That's really useful. Thanks, Keane, for that. And I know if you have to go on to the vote tonight, thanks for joining us. But if not, hopefully you'll be here for another little bit. I'm going to take in Claire O'Connor now, who's been involved in organising that grassroots campaign that you refer to around Oscar Traynor. Maybe, Claire, you want to give your sense of what you've heard tonight and maybe describe a bit about the campaign and what people can do.
Yeah, I mean, I think everybody's really hit the nail on the head. I think Cian made a really good point there in terms of a strong no vote and a kind of stand from the councillors will send a message to the department that they might not be able to keep railroading these kind of deals through. And had a stand like that been taken around O'Devany, you know, considering it's been so long and there's been no movement, as Leisha said, we might be a little bit further down the road in that conversation and, you know, looking at the actual alternatives and how we can kind of build communities from a council and a state level ourselves. So, yeah, I completely agree. Obviously, John laid out the actual situation in the area earlier on. I know, like, I got involved with John, which John has been working in the area on this because, you know, with this community engagement and this, he had set up like a consultation panel and stuff like that. But I'm actually from the area. I grew up in Kilmore. I'm a 5-minute walk from the land itself. And, it's, you know, obviously you don't take these, you know, this is a national issue. This, you know, public housing and public land and not gifting, you know, kind of really valuable land like this to a private developer for profit is really important. But, you know, from a local level, I look and I think that people in the local area, very few people will be able to actually access any of that housing. And that's it's just really unacceptable. I mean, people in the area that are living in overcrowded accommodation, you know, you have 3-4 generations of families in the one house and whole families in box bedrooms are seeing a massive development go on up the road that's happening on public land and it's not available to them. And it's just locking people out, you know, again and again and again. And again, going kind of back to O'Devany, because I do think it's really important that the two links here is that some of the arguments around O'Devany was, you know, Fine Gael were so ideologically wedded that, and Owen Murphy was putting serious pressure, like he sent letters into the council to make it clear that if they voted no, he was going to take it out of their hands anyway. Like it was a really, you know, it was a really kind of murky situation. You know, Dara O'Brien has said he has a different ideology around public housing. I think anybody who's heard him talking about co-living recently would question that and some of the rollbacks. But still, it's not the same situation.
Well, he has very publicly declared that he's in favour of public land on, or public housing on public land.
Yeah, he's also said that he's completely against co-living. And I think we've seen how he's backtracked on that and what we're seeing at the minute. So I wouldn't take those things for granted. So I'd like to think they're not. And I think this is like Cian and John have both said, I think this is a vote that we can win. So basically what the campaign is we're asking people to contact their local councillors, their Dublin City councillors, and tell them what this means to them. Tell them they don't want them to vote to gift this land to a private developer for profit and basically ask them to vote no on Monday night. I think a lot more people, there's a huge amount of knowledge that has been gained over the past couple of years in just the general population around housing, around what's possible and the kind of money that's been made and the profit that's been made. So I just don't think people are willing to accept this kind of thing anymore. And I think that like there was a massive response to the campaign around O'Devany. Now it still went ahead. I don't think that's going to happen this time. I think, people are going to be listened to. I think we're getting a great response to it already. In the campaign, we have a video and it's a couple of people, two women, speaking about their own experiences, but what they're actually through the other side. So they have, you know, both accessed either an affordable mortgage or an affordable rental. And they're talking about the difference it's made in their children's lives and their lives and that they want that for other people. And I just think sometimes you need to bring it back to the positives about what public housing could actually do for people. And this development is going to lock out, you know, 80% of this development is going to lock out those kind of people. So I really hope people get behind it.
Great. Thanks, Claire. And I'll get you to give the details that people, I know Uplift, there's a petition on Uplift and you give those details at the end of the programme. That'd be great. I'm just going to come back to you, John. In terms of those questions around, you know, the funding for, you know, the parks, those aspects. And, you know, I've looked at the plan as well and they look really, really impressive. And they're absolutely necessary, you know, and planning, you know, and all the failures of past, you know, public housing has been where those facilities haven't been put in. It hasn't been designed properly. And so are the city executive, you know, right in a way to say, you know, this is the only way we can deliver, you know, guarantee this level of, because the funding doesn't come in with housing from the Department of Housing to do all these extra facilities.
Yeah, no, it was said to us, we had a meeting about a fortnight ago, because at our last area committee meeting, that figure that Leisha mentioned of 450,000 for a city council social housing unit was mentioned, and myself and another councillor couldn't believe that figure. So they actually organised a separate meeting to kind of dig down into those figures that Cian mentioned earlier. But at that meeting, it was said to us very clearly that the funding from the department for all the extra, for the community centre, the creche, the landscaping, the parks, the river works of the Nanakin River, that will not come from the department. They've been quite clear with that. Owen Keegan said to me in 2016 that what I was advocating would happen with the Oscar Traynor Road site just wouldn't get the funding from the department. It just ain't going to happen the way you want it to happen. And that's true. And it speaks of a situation where, yeah, if we can get the numbers on Monday to reject the disposal because it is such a poor deal, it's no guarantee that we're going to be able to secure the funding, whether it's from the department, from central government, from the European Investment Bank, whatever it is. We do know that they are trialing that cost renting model down in St. Michael's Estate in Inchcore, down on Emmett Road, where it's going to be 30% social, 70% cost rental. Now, there's still details to be worked out on that. But look, it's a battle. Like it is, that there are no guarantees. And what the City Council is saying to us is that here we have an asset that's valued from the vacant sites register at 44 million. We're going to get, as was mentioned, 40 million in cash into some local POS community fund. And we're going to get the return of 253 social housing units. They think that's a good deal. I don't think that's a good deal. I think most people don't think that's a good return. That 70% of the units are going to be unaffordable, out of reach of most people, most individuals, couples and families, really struggling to get by. And you know, and everyone here knows how badly people are struggling at the moment because of the cost of their housing situations. So look, it's a bad deal, but what it will require come Monday evening, it will require the housing committee right now has a subgroup on public housing. So they're actually trying to work through some of the detail around alternative models to deliver public housing. That's a change on last year or the year before, because it was this time last year, Rory, where the vote no definitely happened. And it was the following month in December 2019 where I actually tried to overturn the decision. And that's where all the pressure came in on us from the department, from the minister and from others that, look, if you don't put this vote this through, nothing will happen. And that's a hard argument because people want housing. We all want housing. And it's a hard argument when the threat is that nothing's going to happen on that side. But that's where Claire mentions the campaign has to come in. There's no point the councillors doing what they should rightly do, which is to fight tooth and nail for a better housing plan for the people of Dublin. But we do need public pressure. We got a bit of that in O'Devney, and I think the city officials felt that the heat in terms of the lack of affordable housing and the cost of the social housing units, the unaffordability of the 50% of the private units. The same applies here with Oscar Traynor. So I think we need to build up and generate the public awareness of the Oscar Traynor Road deal, similar to O'Devney, but to go further, because we do need a campaign.
Yeah, John, just on that, have you spoken to Fianna Fáil and the Greens in the council? And I what is like, and you know, is there a movement there, or what's is there openness to voting this down, or you know, pausing it, or?
Yeah, no, there is. I've been ringing around for the past week, and there seems to be a significant shift among certain groups that unfortunately voted the O'Devney deal over the line last year. And I think they were burnt by that. And I think it's a learning process too, in terms of questioning more and getting into the details of some of the figures. And I think some of the parties and individuals don't want a repeat of what happened and the way they voted over O'Devney. So I think there is a shift happening. I won't go into too much more because you don't know. And you want to respect what people have said. But there is a shift. But just I'll finish on this, Rory, because it's sometimes if the officials, like it's a hierarchical bureaucratic organization, but there are so many good people within Dublin City Council, within the housing section, within the architects department, who the planning department, we actually do have a lot of the skills and knowledge. And if you look at the plans for Dublin City Council self-builds over the next couple of years, we're talking about directly self-building over 1,000 City Council units. We're using our own architects. We have our own internal development framework panel from which we can select different contractors through the tender process. So we actually do have a lot of the knowledge, skills and experience. It just needs to be scaled up.
Yeah.
And there needs to be a willingness. And unfortunately, because it is hierarchical, it's dominated from the top down. And I believe the top are pretty much dominated by the customs house. And so it's very hard to get any change. And, you know, two proposals which are rubber stamped from the CEO's office and from the Department of from the housing section's office. But look, there is, like I do see it, the City Council are doing this in small pockets throughout my area. Coolock in Kilmore is one where they're going to redevelop the Cromcastle Court site. That's a significant one. It's going to be a couple of hundred units there. It can be done.
Yeah.
We just need to force it changed in direction to actually say, look, this is a significant vote on Monday, and it could be the beginning of moving in a different direction, which actually does provide high quality, really affordable social rental, social purchase, cost rental housing for the people of Dublin.
Great. Thanks, John Lyons. Thanks for coming on and joining us tonight. I know you have to go as well. Cian O'Callaghan, just before I am very conscious about you here going for a vote, you're still here, which is great. So just before I go back to Leisha and Claire, your sense of, the change in kind of the political and public kind of approach to housing, I think particularly since the general election, and in a way COVID has kind of, kind of obviously understandably dominated, and that kind of sense of that wave of demand of change, particularly on housing, we know housing and health, that really we're likely to see the minister is not going to be in the same position, I think, as the last minister to get away with something like this, in a sense of just it just been passed over, that there is a real public demand out there for actually what has been called for here, you know, the use of public land to build affordable housing and public housing.
You know, 100%. And I think the expectation actually now from the public is that the minister would deliver on what he's saying, which is, you know, public housing and public land. He said it a lot. People expect that to happen. People are absolutely, you know, sick in the gut at just seeing how close the kind of the entire kind of housing system has been to what developers want. And it was actually a very good report done by an academic in UCD in Queens on democratizing the Irish planning system, which shows that it basically says that the Department of Housing and kind of state policy around housing has been captured by developer interests. And they did a whole load of interviews with, you know, politicians, civil servants, developers, and developers were saying, look, we just the government have taken an awful lot of what we've lobbied for, just, you know, word for word, and implemented and put it into legislation. And we're seeing that, you know, just kind of multiple examples of that at the moment. So I think you're right. Like, the political conditions to stop this and get a public model in are actually quite good in terms of our public support is. And as Claire and John have said, you know, yeah, public awareness and kind of people are much better informed about these kind of things now as well. So I think if the vote, if this deal went through on Monday night, I think there'd be uproar about it. Very hopeful there won't be. And I'd be quite hopeful that there should be, you know, hopefully a strong groundswell of support for, you know, I say a different model or alternative model, but actually it's just going back to what was the original model, which was public housing and public land. So there's nothing, you know, remotely radical about going back to what was being done about 10 years ago or so before this kind of very ideological neoliberal approach has been foisted onto the council. So yeah, I'd be quite hopeful in that regard. But it does take, there's no question, these kind of campaigns that mobilise people, I actually think are very, very effective. And without them, anything can happen. When, you know, those kind of wavering councillors who could vote either way, when they know that people are kind of watching them on this and paying attention and they care about it, that's much more likely to swing them into voting for the public housing model. If they think no one's paying attention to it, some of those middle ground people may just go along with what the council's saying. And I agree with John, like it is healthy to see stronger questioning of the kind of cases and that being put forward by the council officials. As you said, a lot of them do a lot of great work, but they also, at a senior level, they have a particular skill set at knowing how to try and get councillors to vote for things. And you need to have a kind of deep questioning of the narratives that are putting forward in front of them just to get through a vote.
That's great. Thanks. Yeah. Thanks, Cian O'Callaghan, for that. And I think, you know, you've highlighted again some really important points around this. And, you know, in particular, I think, you know, this idea that this isn't something radical. And in a sense, it is about going back to what this country has done. And, you know, I myself worked in Dolphin House and Dolphin's Barn on a regeneration project there. And that successfully, what John talked about, you know, Dublin City Council delivered itself with its architects, and I worked with them. The first phase of the regeneration there, completely public housing. There is no reason why this can't be done. Leisha Neelan from the Dublin Inquirer, just on to that, do you think that we're in a different place now than last year? Because if we look at, we have the likes of the Enniskerry cost rental housing development being done. We have St. Michael's progressing as a cost rental model. That, you know, there really is no, in the sense of there not being an alternative, just isn't the case now. There is very clearly an alternative way to use public land that is there.
There's a pilot for cost rental in Enniskerry. There's a lot of talk about affordable rental, and there's a lot of plans for affordable rental. I suppose the question that arises is, how do you make sure that it's truly affordable? And how do you make sure that people don't, I suppose the thing I wonder about with it is, how do you make sure that people don't come in and then skip over, leapfrog over somebody who's been on the council list for 15 years and get a house ahead of them when their need isn't as great? So there's an issue around that. I mean, the game at hand has to be the delivery of social housing. That has to be the priority. Does the criteria for that needs to be widened? You know, maybe there is people out there who have a desperate housing need, and maybe there is a way of doing a mix of maybe like 70% social and 30% affordable rental, something like that. But you wouldn't want to see all these sites being given over to affordable rental without a very high proportion of social housing in there either, because that's obviously where the need is greatest. So the good thing, I suppose, about the affordable rental, in theory, it should pay for itself. So it shouldn't be a massive drain on the taxpayers' resources in that way. But if it's a matter of diverting funds from social housing, you know, the thing is, there's a limited budget for housing. So we've seen how much the minister's given.
But it's not actually the case that there's a limited budget for housing.
There is for next year, according to the budget.
In terms of what's set out. But there's no reason why. And actually, there's 3 billion of discretionary funding available that the government has set out in terms of dealing with and responding to the pandemic. There's also, if the government uses different models, and that's why, in a way, the affordable rental is so significant, is that you can, you know, get different sources of funding that isn't just reliant on the exchequer, like the European Investment Bank.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. But in answer to your question, we've seen what the minister intends to do.
Yeah.
Which is 600 extra homes.
Yeah.
It really isn't going to make a dent, because that's nationally. I mean, we need 6,000 in Dublin.
Yeah.
So that's the answer to your question. Do I really think anything is going to change? No, not according to the figures in the budget. It doesn't look like there is going to be a difference next year compared to, you know, Darragh Bryan hasn't shown form for doing anything radically different from his predecessor so far. Maybe he will in the future, but I haven't seen anything to indicate that to me at this moment.
But do you think that the political context has changed in the sense that, with, you know, as they're talking about here, for example, the Social Democrat councillors are going to vote against it this time? You know, are we likely to see Green councillors and Fianna Fáil councillors vote against the deal, do you think?
It remains to be seen, Rory. I wouldn't like to call it at this stage. Yes, the councillors may reject it. I think that's quite likely. But we need for that to be fruitful. The housing minister has to, the government has to be willing to really increase the budget for housing. So I do think there's a high possibility that the councillors will reject the deal on Monday night. Yeah.
Great, Leisha, thanks a million. I'll go on to Claire O'Connor. In terms of kind of the importance of this for not just, you know, people who live in the communities, as you've said, but what Leisha has talked about there, you know, the level of housing need that is out there, and both in terms of social housing, you know, as you've referred to, overcrowding, but also people who have, you know, are stuck in generation rent, have no prospect of buying their home, that there is a real need to guarantee that there's actually affordable housing built. And really, this plan doesn't guarantee it.
No, well, it's no change from the ideological process that's been there for the past couple of years. I mean, we need to see, like Leisha said, a radical change in the actual housing policy within the department. So, I mean, you take inner city help and homeless, for example, even though Leisha's talking about social housing there, a lot of the people that are actually coming into homelessness and emergency accommodation would have been people that were privately renting. So even that, just affordable rental and as well as the social housing, would actually prevent people entering homelessness in the first place. Increasing the accessibility of affordable rental, affordable purchase, it would hopefully kind of stem the tide of people entering emergency accommodation, entering homelessness, which would hopefully free up resources there as well. I think you look at the REITs, you look at the fact that this whole model, this whole financing model by the private developer is really based around the fact that, say the first block is going to be sold off to a REIT. That REIT will then rent the majority of the block back to a council in the form of HAP. The state is going to pay through the absolute nose to house people in social housing then, when the state could just borrow that money now at ridiculously low rates and fund it itself. I mean, it's just, all the arguments have been laid out. All the experts have been saying this for a long time. Like, these kind of arguments have been put across for years and we haven't seen any change. I know I might seem very negative, but I don't see Dara O'Brien driving that change either, because I didn't see it in the budget, even in terms of the discretionary budget. I mean, if you look at where a lot of the money was allocated, it wasn't capital fund, it wasn't capital spend. You know, even in the money that has been spent in the months since the pandemic has started, it's all in current spending. Like, we're not seeing any structural change, even on the back of COVID, even on the back of the pandemic. A lot of the hope that, you know, we've seen how COVID has just kind of traveled down the existing lines of inequality that were already there. And there's been so many opportunities since to radically change how we do things, to address what is now, you know, it's impossible to ignore. The things that all of us here who have been working in this area for a couple of years, we've seen it, we know what's there. It's impossible for anybody to ignore those things now. And yet we haven't seen any kind of radical change. Housing is, you know, it's just another example of that. I do think that the public are much more aware, and I think realistically the political situation has been so farcical over the past while that I do think they need a win. They might see just voting no to this on Monday as a little win, and again, not actually putting anything behind this, so it doesn't really mean anything. They'll just come back with another proposal down the line, and that doesn't benefit anybody that needs housing either. But like Alicia said earlier on, we could be 18 months down the line from O'Devney before anything happens in the first place. And one of the arguments at the time of O'Devney about why that deal needed to go through was that land could sit there for years with nothing happening on it. Sure, that could happen anyway. We're likely heading into a recession, you know, and even worse, I mean, technically we are in recession, but we could be heading into some really, really dark times. A private developer could just walk away from that site and leave, you know, a ghost estate, which isn't going to benefit the local area either. It's just massively risky. It's not benefiting anybody, as far as I can see, except the developer who stands to gain huge amounts of money. And we need a radical ideological change in the department, in the council, in how public housing and communities are delivered, before I think, you know, we're really going to see a difference in the number of people entering homelessness, the number of people in emergency accommodation, in overcrowded accommodation, you know, right across the board, before it really starts to actually impact people.
No, I absolutely agree with you. And I think that, you know, the question, or the point is, and I think, you know, of the campaign, and is that this is a possibility to try and really pinpoint, you know, here is where the government can do something different. You know, here is where the council can do something different. And I think we are in a different situation now. And I think particularly the idea, and maybe just keen to finish and finish from each of you, last word. Do you think that, you know, this is possible to, you know, push back and actually get a change from the minister and the government to actually fund the council to do this differently, even despite we haven't seen that kind of radical housing policy shift?
I think it's absolutely possible. I think some of these arguments are getting run now, you know, so I'd be quite hopeful in that sense. I do think there's a shift occurring on this. Is it going to have to be hard fought step by step? Absolutely, 100%. Everything that's worth fighting for is.
Great. Thanks, Keen. And Alicia, just in terms of your final word from you, in terms of, you know, this deal, you know, what do you think as a, you know, is it likely, do you think, just to be pushed through, or do you think that there's something else possible with it if enough political pressure and public campaign goes behind it?
Yeah, of course it is possible. I mean, the councillors have been working on developing their own model of public housing, which they've signed up to and agreed upon within the Housing Committee. And so they have got an idea they want to deliver is a mix of affordable and social. And so I suppose there will be a lot of people that would like to see that done on this site as well. It's quirky, just little fact for you there, that we were talking about how, Claire was talking about how the sites get privatised and then it comes back into the social housing stock anyway to happen, all the rest of that stuff.
Yeah.
Kennedy Wilson have bought 40 homes in what was Fatima, New Herberton Complex, and that's their Part 5 for Capital Dock, which is the tallest building in Dublin. So not only do they come back into social housing through HAP, but they actually come back into social housing through Part 5. So the whole idea of creating this social mix by privatising the site it's really not working at all. And we're seeing these houses coming back in at just double, triple the cost to the taxpayer and still coming back into the social housing net anyway. So that is just really quite hard to understand. And when you look at the amount of money going out on HAP as well, and it is definitely bad business for the state.
Yeah.
So perhaps at some stage they'll realise that, I don't know.
Yeah, no, I think you're absolutely right. Again, the illogicality of the whole housing assistance payments system, the Part 5, the enhanced leasing, you know, just as you say, we're paying for social housing multiple times. And as Cian made the point, not only are we paying for it multiple times, we're paying for the asset that's accumulated by the landlord or the investor. We're paying off their mortgage. And it is, you know, this is where, you know, following decades of market-led neoliberal housing policies leads you to when you cut back and you're so reliant on the state to deliver. And I think that my own sense is that this is actually, you know, a significant point. And I think this deal could be one of those pivots where we see, in a way, housing policy being forced to change from the bottom up. And just to finish on that, Claire, maybe you could kind of come back just to finish around what, again, we know that you have the video done. There's a petition. Maybe you could say to people where that is, where they could find that, and, you know, basically encouraging them to do that.
Yeah, just one brief point before I do in around HAP. Not only does it cost the state, you know, multiples of what social housing does, it's more insecure, and it actually, the amount of people that end up in homelessness 2-3 times on the back of HAP is absolutely crazy. So like we're paying more for less security around the campaign.
And actually, sorry, just because Leisha actually just wrote an article on that for the Dublin Inquirer highlighting that, which I thought was a really good point, that the top ups that people are paying on HAP means that they're being pushed into poverty. So not only is it an insecure form of social housing, it's actually, for those in receipt of it, it's not a real form of social housing at all.
Yeah, and it just keeps the market rents really high as well. You know,
it's kind of
falsely inflated. So in terms of the campaign, it's the Oscar Traynor Land, Oscar Traynor Road housing campaign on Facebook. You'll find all the information on there. There's the uplift. It's an action as opposed to a petition. So what it is a couple of clicks, and you can email all your councillors with a kind of template email. You can the space there to put your own details in as well, and it's just it gives you all the details about how you can contact, who you can contact. There's a lot of information in there as well about the different types of public housing. Again, I think there's a real kind of political and social education piece in this as well, that the more people understand, the more likely they are to become engaged in campaigns like this, the more likely we win the wars, as Cian said. So, you know, yeah, we might win on Monday, but also if the council and the department know that people are much more engaged and just aren't willing to accept those kind of old style, you know, scraps off the table type developments, they'd be a little bit less likely to put those kind of projects forward again. So yeah, all the information is there. It's Oscar Traynor Road housing campaign on Facebook, and on Twitter you'll find it with hashtag Save Oscar Traynor.
Great. Thank you so much. And thank you, Cian O'Callaghan, TD from the Social Democrats, joining us, and Leisha Neelan from the Dublin Inquirer, Claire O'Connor from the Oscar Traynor campaign. It was and John Lyons, independent councillor. It was a really, really important discussion tonight. And that is what also we're trying to do in Reboot Republic, is to educate and inform people about these issues, and also importantly, what they can actually do as well. So I would encourage you to take that action. And it's going to be really interesting to see what happens in the coming weeks. I do actually think that this is a point where we need to see a big change in housing policy. And it's so just, you know, it's so clear what's there. It's public land. It's there. The capacity is there within the state to build. The funding is there. It seems to me that it's any other outcome would be a disaster. And there, you know, it's clearly there. It is needed. So thank you, everyone, for listening. And as always, we're an independent media. We rely on you to keep the cost of the lights on and these podcasts coming out. So if you enjoy what you're listening to, please sign up. Become a patron, sign up to patreon.com/tortoiseshack, and keep this podcast running. Thank you very much, and talk to you all soon.